little bit of history. We were somewhat lost as a group. We had just elected the first African American president, and that was a big deal. And that was a hill that we got over, and it was something that we were all proud of. And we weren't sure what to do. And a little bit of cynicism, what do? This is a terrible thing. We elected Mike Steele to be the RNC chair because he's a black guy. That was the wrong thing to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, meet the CPAC director. His name is Ian Walters. CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, which just happened a couple of weeks ago. And there he is on the stage talking about Michael Steele. For those of you that don't know, Michael Steele is an African American. And he pointed out that when they elected Michael Steele to be the head of the Republican Party, they did a terrible thing, and that simply should not have happened. Oh, my goodness gracious. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 245. My name is Melvin. I want to thank you so much for being here. So there he is at CPAC a couple of weeks ago saying, we put Mike Steele in that position, and we should not have done that, and how awful that was. I remember when Michael Steele ended up in that position. Yeah, the Democratic Party had just nominated and elected Barack Obama to be president of the United States. Shifting demographics are something that the GOP is constantly concerned about. We hear about this every election because in Texas especially, they're so concerned that all of those Latinos are eventually going to turn Texas purple or even worse, blue. And after we elected a black president in 2008, the Republican Party said, oh my God, what are we going to do? So they picked Mike Steele. And right away, instant backlash from the constituency. Because they didn't like anything that anytime Michael Steele went on TV, they did not care for the things that he said. And there was all kinds of uproar from the Republican Party about the things that Michael Steele was saying. And then Michael Steele would do something, and then there would be all kinds of uproar again because Michael Steele's doing all kinds of things. He didn't last long as the head of the Republican Party. And I remember seeing him get elected as the head of the Republican Party. He's the head of the GOP. And I said, it's pretty clear what the GOP is trying to do by electing Mike Steele. You got a black guy, we got a black guy too. And I'm embarrassed to admit this. But I write songs. I've written songs forever. And after Michael Steele was elected to that position, I wrote a song called Sambo Steele. It's not very nice, but I can admit my mistake. So I had the beat, and I had the lyrics. And for those of you that don't know, Sambo is a term. It's an old slave term. See, I'm getting real bad here. But even I can admit what I've done wrong. And a Sambo is somebody who is eager to please their white masters. And my whole reasoning behind this was it was clear to me, even back then, that there was a lot of racism, not necessarily from the top, but there was definitely a racist constituency in the Republican Party. Being a Republican does not automatically make you racist. But all racists are Republican. There's no other party that takes them in. Well, Libertarians might take them in, but Libertarian isn't one of the two major parties. But the Democrats are not having you if you are a racist. And when he decided to be the head of that party, well, I snapped. And when I put pen to paper and I got the beat, I never recorded the song. I still have it. I still got the beat sitting somewhere. I still got the lyrics somewhere. I still got most of the lyrics memorized. Because it's still relatively fresh in my mind. It was only 10 years ago that that happened. But what I've done over the last 10 years, after Michael Steele got out of that position as the head of the Republican Party, he moved on to become a commentator on MSNBC. And every time he'd come on MSNBC, I would just cross my arms and look down at the TV screen. And it didn't take me very long to realize, okay, he's clearly conservative, but he's not a wackadoodle conservative. And eventually I, you know, opened my eyes a little bit more and I uncrossed my arms. And when he came on, I wouldn't respond in such a negative way. And I go, okay, you're a conservative, but I'm cool with that. Actually, you know, yeah, sure, we disagree on some things, but I don't think you're nuts, and I think that you have a lot of sincerely held beliefs, but it still struck me as funny. What are you doing in a party that clearly does not care for you based on your skin color alone? So, Matchlap went on to Michael Steele also has a SiriusXM show. After Ian Walter said this thing at CPAC, Matchlap decided to go on to, who also works for CPAC, decided to go on to Michael Steele's SiriusXM show and try to, I suppose clear things up a little bit.
You have been rather critical of some of the more conservative aspects of the Trump phenomenon and this Trump agenda. I think what Ian was getting to the heart of that was there are people who are critics of some of the things you did as you were chairman.
What the hell does that my race have to do with any of that? At the end of the day, what does the color of my skin have to do with anything you just said? So you mean to tell me that as a black conservative, put it in that context, but let alone as a conservative, I can't be critical of the president?
You can be, but as you know, that there are a lot of people, I think, take race out of it.
Yeah.
If you look at the criticisms.
But he injected race into it.
He did. That was the, I would agree with you.
So again.
Those words that tumbled out of his mouth.
Right.
I believed were unfortunate words.
They were stupid. It's not unfortunate. You call it what it is.
Don't take the worst out of what he said. You know him. I know, but this is where you need to have some grace. Look at what.
Wait a minute. Wait, what the hell do I have to be graceful for?
Well, you've not been very graceful. You've not been very graceful to the Republicans and the conservatives in this hall and in this room for a very long period of time.
And there it is. Matt Schlapp says, you've been critical of the Republican Party. And here's what you'll learn when it comes to the modern day GOP. Reagan's 11th commandment, and that is, as a conservative, you do not criticize other conservatives. As a Republican, you do not criticize other Republicans. Republicans and conservatives can do no wrong. We have nothing to learn from the mistakes we make because we simply make no mistakes. And then Matt Schlapp, a white guy, turns to Michael Steele and says, you need to humble yourself, which is another way of saying, sit down, boy. It was always a surprise to me. Steele decided to be a part of that party. And then he decided to take a leadership position inside that party. But over the last number of years, I have gotten to know Michael Steele. And I believe that his beliefs are sincerely held. And he's taken a lot of heat from being a Republican.
To be graceful for. I've spent 41 years in this party. 41. All right? I've taken crap you have no idea about, and I've carried this baggage. And for him to stand on that stage and denigrate my service to this party, and for you as a friend to sit here and sit there and go, well, you've been critical of the party. There's only one word I can say, and I can't say it on this air.
Back in 2008, after Barack Obama became president, I was pretty hard left, and there was absolutely nothing that I was able to see in any conservative whatsoever. The simple mention, you're a conservative, eyes would turn inward and I would grip my teeth and pull my fists in. No freaking way, man. And since then, I've grown up quite a bit. Because there is no political party anywhere that says, you know, we want the worst of everything and let's just do the worst stuff and so on and so forth. And I've spent a lot of time learning about, of course, you learn about the racist ones too, but then you learn about the not racist ones. You know, the what it means to be a conservative outside of race, what it means to be a conservative socially, what it means to be a conservative economically. You know, yeah, there's a lot of race in that party, a lot of race problems in that party, but I think that's because the economics of at least modern day conservatism don't comport with a lot of working people's beliefs. The fact that tax cuts are the way they believe you do everything and anything. I mean, the way that rich people should have all of the power. Now, that stuff doesn't work. The way that our elections should be able to be bought by multinational corporations. You know, not even American corporations. It doesn't matter where they're from. If they got the money, they should be able to buy as many senators and House members as they want. That doesn't make a lot of sense for working people. And the vast majority of the people in this country are working people. So how do you bring other people in? Well, you go, see that Mexican guy over there? He wants to take your job. Yep, we got to throw all them out because they're taking your... Oh, by the way, welfare, food stamps, housing assistance, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of black people taking that. Every time you go to your job, work 8 to 10 hours a day, come home, sit on the couch and sip your beer, well, there's a blackie on the other side of town, and he's also sipping a beer, but this time it's a 40 ounce, and he's doing so because you bought it for him. Because welfare is mostly supporting the black folk. See, the GOP had to bring in race because there was no way they're going to get a lot of people to agree with the insane economic ideas because their ideas don't work for working people. So the party is now, as I see it, at a bit of a crossroads. They've got this huge racist constituency with the KKK and with the neo-Nazis and with the alt-right. And those guys are diehard, whatever it takes, conservative on, whatever we got to do to keep these guys in power, that's where they're at. Oh my God. And they're super loyal to Donald Trump. He can absolutely do no wrong. Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh can do no wrong. Ted Cruz can do no wrong. Everything they do is just fine. Reagan's 11th commandment, we will not criticize. Absolutely not. But then there are other folks. There are Latin conservatives. There are black conservatives. There are Caribbean conservatives. You can find sincerely held conservative beliefs in any race. And so you've got all of those folks too. So how do you bring those folks into the party who honestly believe in a vision of conservatism? Maybe it's an old, say, Dwight D. Eisenhower type conservatism, but it's a conservatism. How do you bring those people in and still keep the racists happy?
And the other thing that I find very bothersome, when he talks about being graceful and my criticism of the party, there have been many other people who have been critical of this president who've landed jobs in this administration, who've been endorsed by this president. So what was it about my criticism that required 8 years after my chairmanship for you to stand up on a national platform and to take down the hard work that I'd done and to demean it by saying I only was able to do it because I was black? It makes no sense. It's stupid. And I think it hurts the party to its core. I don't know how we go into an African-American community and say, hey, we want you to run for office. Why? Are you asking us just because we're black? Or because we align with the values and the principles that supposedly all Republicans adhere to?
To answer my own question, it seems as simple as this. There was a time where you would hear rumblings about the backroom GOP, the things that were said behind closed doors, you know, the racist jokes, the talking about how dumb the constituency is because they buy into this racist idea, and they subscribe to this idea we need to throw out all the Mexicans and immigration's the problem. It's not that rich people have everything. It's that brown people are here and they're taking it from you. There was a time you'd hear about these conversations in the back rooms, right? They think about the fat guys with the cigars in their mouths and counting money or whatever they do. I don't know. I've not spent any time in those back rooms. But it's gone from that to the front lines. Last year, the president mentioned a neo-Nazi march and said that they were very fine people on both sides. He's found himself saying that a judge cannot judge him because that judge is Mexican. Who the hell does that guy think he is? And we've gone through all the racist comments, so on and so forth. And then there's America First. America First is a neo-Nazi phrase. It's always been known as that. See, this is the old Lindbergh thing. Because Lindbergh didn't want the United States getting into World War II. Because he agreed with the Nazis. He thought what the Nazis were doing was just fine. But you can't get up and say, Nazis are okay in the United States, shouldn't go to war with the Nazis. So what do? You market. You repackage. America first. When this phrase came back onto the scene with the Donald Trump candidacy, a lot of us just, oogie, ooh, what? There should have been a ton of backlash from that. But then you realize a lot of the people around us don't necessarily have the same kind of awareness of history when it comes to this stuff. So a lot of people hear America first and they go, hey, that's pretty great. And so the media starts covering it and they go, whoa, 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 whoa. This is the old Lindbergh thing. America first. It's a Nazi phrase. America first. Sounds pretty good to me. So here we are in 2018. And the United States GOP, they're at that crossroads. What are you going to do? You going to have a bigger and more inclusive tent? Or are you going to continue to try the racist route? Now, the racist route has worked great for you guys. Even after all the horribly racist stuff Donald Trump said during 2016, he still got the presidency. Even with all of the super duper racist stuff he says now as president, you still continue to support him. So is it any wonder which way they're really going to go? Let's go to Arizona.
And let's go fly, fight, and win.
It takes a lot to overshadow a member of Congress flying a World War II era jet around her state, announcing a Senate campaign. But President Trump's reported vulgar comments about African countries managed to do it, stepping on former fighter pilot and Tucson Congresswoman Martha McSally's Senate rollout.
My friend Martha McSally.
I had to ask. When the president talks about immigrants from ish-hole countries, is that racist? Is that acceptable to you?
Well, let me just say I speak a little salty behind closed doors at times as well, and so I'm not going to throw the first stone on using any language.
If McSally, who attended last week's televised immigration meeting at the White House, backs away from the president, she'll hear about it from her primary opponent, Dr. Kelly Ward.
McSally is pretending to be an ally of President Trump.
She greeted McSally's entrance to the race with this ad, calling her a pretender.
You call Martha McSally a pretender?
Yes.
Explain.
Well, it's pretty clear she's a campaign conservative, just like we've seen from John McCain and Jeff Flake.
Ward primary John McCain in 2016 and lost. She takes credit for forcing Jeff Flake into early retirement and shows no qualms about embracing President Trump and his agenda.
Dr. Ward, what's this race going to be about?
I think it's going to be about America first. I think that's what people are crying out for. That's what how Donald Trump got elected was on those policies. And I think that's what this election will be about.
I don't play these Mickey Mouse political games. I was with him, and I'm with him to the end.
But if Ward believes she's the candidate most aligned with the president on substance, former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio is clearly the contender who most shares Donald Trump's style, right down to questioning Barack Obama's birthplace, something he still does when I bring it up.
It seems like it ought to be a yes or no question.
No, it can't be. It can't be. I don't care where he came from.
What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know where he came from, okay? Is that what you're asking me? Are you asking me whether he came here or legally here? I don't know.
His presidential pardon proudly displayed on his office wall, the controversial former sheriff could be the race's X factor. Universally known, loved, or hated, still itching for a fight.
Are you Arizona's Roy Moore? Somebody who could be popular with the base but can't win against a Democrat in a state like Arizona?
Well, how did I win six races, general elections then? How'd that work?
John McCain and Jeff Flake are not considered conservative enough. And these two guys are pretty damn conservative, right down to voting the vast majority of the time with Trump's agenda. But they're not racist enough. And then, of course, with Joe Arpaio in the race, and this is the only thing that Joe Arpaio is known for, being a horrible, horrible, horrible racist. And you heard it there. Joe Arpaio's in the race. Barack Obama wasn't born here. Nope. Nope. Uh-uh. America first. If I had heard that clip 10 years ago, my hair, I've not had hair for 10 years, my scalp would have been on fire. I would have been, what the, No way any of those people are going to win, but every single one of them has a fighting chance because they're using racist rhetoric. They're getting on stage and they're screaming about immigrants. They're getting on stage and they're, that damn Barack Obama won. He's not president anymore. It doesn't matter. He wasn't born here. America first. And the meaning of that has not changed. When the alt-right hears that, they hear the same thing. When neo-Nazis hear that, they hear the same thing. When the Klan hears that, they hear the same thing. Nothing has changed. So they've decided to go the much more racist route, and then they've decided to double down on it. The Trump administration is now suing the state of California for not enforcing immigration laws. Their phrase. But remember, with all of this stuff, this is really just a matter of repackaging.
This is completely unprecedented for the chief law enforcement of the United States to come out here and engage in a political stunt, make wild accusations, many of which are based on outright lies. That's unusual. I do think this is pure red meat for the base, and I would assume, but this is pure speculation, that Jeff thinks that Donald will be happier with him, and I'm sure Donald will be tweeting his joy at this particular performance.
So conservatives in general think that teachers don't do enough work. They also need to pack heat and murder students. And of course, when it comes to law enforcement, it's not enough to simply be local law enforcement. You also have to be immigration enforcement. You're not going to get paid more for that, but you got to do that too. And so we have these things that are commonly referred to as sanctuary cities. And really all that means is that law enforcement is simply going to do law enforcement, but they're not going to do immigration. Because here's the problem with a city that is not a sanctuary city. Let's say there is an immigrant couple living here. And the male, say it's a male or female, and the male of the couple decides that he's going to beat the piss out of his wife or girlfriend or whoever she is. But they're both here and they're undocumented. Neither one of them has their papers. She's not going to call the police. Because if the police, if you're living in one of these red states, you know, and your local police are involved in ICE activity, she's not going to call the police. Or let's say that they get robbed, right? Let's say it's not domestic violence. Let's say they get robbed. They come home, their house has been robbed. You know what? We live in Kentucky, and neither one of us is a legal resident of the United States. And so they're not going to call local law enforcement. And they're just going to be taken advantage of. Let's get into the situation that happens a lot more, though. An employer says, I want to pay you $1 an hour, and you're going to live in my basement. You're going to work 16 hours a day and you're going to live in my basement. You'll be served water, a bowl of rice, maybe a couple slices of bread, and you're going to work off your debt to me for smuggling you here to America. And if you say anything to anybody, I will call the police. The police will come here. They will ask for your papers. I don't know who you are. I just found you here. So yeah, it's a completely racist policy. And Jeff Sessions, who is a frequent target of Donald Trump, because he won't cover up for Donald Trump in the Russia investigation, has decided he still wants to win his daddy's heart. Oh my God, I gotta win his heart. So he decides he's going to sue the state. Look, daddy, I'm suing the biggest state in the union, the biggest sanctuary state in the union. I'm suing him, daddy. Love me, daddy. Love me. It's not going to work, of course, but he's trying it. And yeah, every single bit of this has nothing to do with the law. Every little bit of this has everything to do with white supremacy.
See, right there. Did I not predict white supremacy? All because we want to enforce the law. White supremacy. They never engage in the issue. There you heard it. White supremacy. A president, attorney general, basing their policies on white supremacy. No, sir, we're basing it on the rule of law, which you are flouting. The rule of law, which you are urinating all over.
I play a lot of Limbaugh clips in this show because he is still the top dog when it comes to conservative media. And I do so for good reason, because this is where conservatives get their news from. This is where they get their information from. This is where Trump gets his news and information from. Limbaugh takes things straight from Fox, and the president watches Fox all day. And this is where they get their information from. And so I go there to get that information. I listen so you don't have to, and then I deliver to you. And I was listening today, and I go, man, must be nice. Well, no, not for me, because obviously Limbaugh is lying his ass off, and I can tell. But I go, God, it must be nice to just have a place to go where somebody just reinforces everything you believe, right? No challenge. They just tell you everything that you want. God, that's got to be nice. Of course, I don't want it. I don't want anything like that. If there were a left-wing version of Rush Limbaugh, I would not want it, because I want to know what's actually going on. I think I've pointed that out more than a few times in the past, but God, it must be nice for you guys. So this strategy that they have, you know, these racist policies that they're carrying out, these racist campaigns that they're carrying out, and now that they've got, as we mentioned on last week's show, now that they've got all this help with the Russians when it comes to the voter rolls and when it comes to ads and when it comes to social media, now that the GOP has the help of the Russians and they're kicking millions of people off of the voter rolls, can they still win this year? And I would say, yeah. Yeah, they still have a pretty solid chance of winning. And remember, when it comes to conservatives, they're getting their news from Rush and Hannity and Drudge and Fox, and go on and on and on and on and on. And that's where their information, it's not good information, but it doesn't matter, because it's telling them what they want to hear. And perception is reality. But there is one thing that is counting against this president in a gigantic way. And that is that the rats are clearly beginning to flee the SS Trump.
We need people smarter than the current president advising him. But look, they're leaving for one reason, and it's Donald Trump. There's an old axiom in a lot of industries that's true in politics. You never leave a good job, but you do leave a bad boss. Donald Trump has continued to show that he's incapable of approaching the seriousness of this office. He peddles in a certain amount of chaos, and frankly, we've become conditioned to accept the mediocrity. Cohn left for the reason a lot of others did. If you've got a shot at protecting a shred of your reputation, you leave this White House now.
This White House is thinning out in a big way right now. A lot of the huge policymakers, he just lost his top economic advisor, Gary Cohn. He threw this thing out a couple weeks ago about the tariffs. No thought, just threw it out there. You know, the media was leaving the room, and the meeting had concluded when a reporter decided to just yell at the end after the meeting was all over and go, what are the tariffs going to be like? He goes, 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum. Thank you, everybody. And that's the way that it was announced. It's pretty clear that the way they're doing things is with little thought or without any thought whatsoever. It's hard to say if the racism that the GOP has decided to embrace, they're no longer doing dog whistle stuff. You know, they're doing a little bit of the dog whistle stuff, but they're being more explicit about it now and not just implicit. But they're going with it anyway. That's what they've decided to do. They're going to outrace 2016, and they're going to outrace 2010, and it's going to be so gosh darn racist. That's what they've decided to go with. And they go, it's cool because the Russians are going to help us. But if the conservatives can hold power, either one or both houses this fall, is there still going to be a White House there for them? Or is what I suspect is going to happen, Donald Trump might not be there, or he very likely won't be there. And the Mueller case is going to get so damn close to Donald Trump that it could hurt the conservatives in the fall elections.
One of the problems here is the White House is getting hollowed out, and the number of people capable of doing things, doing real things, whether you agree or disagree ideologically, is getting smaller and smaller, and they seem unable to recruit new people to take these jobs. So the kind of mess-ups we've seen this past week, I think we're going to see over and over and over again. The president's erratic style, I didn't vote for Jeff Sessions, but I think it's a symbol to everybody. What he did to his best friend Jeff Sessions is don't go work there. And I've heard story after story of capable people in the Gary Cohn mold being trying to be recruited by the White House, and no one wants to go.
Oh, but he's going to try. Old Jeff Sessions is going to try. Love me, Daddy. Just love me, Daddy. It's a wild time to be alive. Aren't you glad you're here? It's got its drawbacks, obviously. You know, it's pretty tough. But I feel like if a major change is going to happen in America, man, are we ever prepped for one of those? Are we ever ready for one of those? It's a tough time to be gay. It's a tough time to be black and Latino and Muslim because, yeah, those are the groups that they're going after. But there's plenty of us to be allies to those groups. You know, so for those people that you know around you, yeah, continue to stick with them. This isn't going to last forever.
Opposed to domestic violence of any kind. Everyone knows that, and it almost wouldn't even have to be said. So now you hear it, but you all know it. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
It almost wouldn't have to be said. Almost wouldn't have to be said. But for some reason, the president has to say it. Here's the thing. If you have to say, I am not a racist. Hey, everybody. Look at me. I am not a racist. You've already lost. If you have to tell people that you're not a racist, you got to wonder why they thought you were a racist in the first place. And then that's what you should probably address. Because you have to say, I'm not, well, then there's a problem. Also, if you have to say, I am completely opposed to nobody's for domestic violence. Okay, all right, there's a few. But normal people, regular people, certainly presidents aren't supposed to be for it. So if you find yourself, especially as president, going, I oppose domestic violence. My God, where did you go wrong? Who hurt you? Who did you hurt? The reason the president has to say that he's opposed to domestic violence is because there's no shortage of him defending domestic abusers.
Well, we wish him well. He worked very hard. I found out about it recently, and I was surprised by it. But we certainly wish him well. It's a obviously tough time for him. He did a very good job when he was in the White House. And we hope he has a wonderful career, and hopefully he will have a great career ahead of him. But it was very sad when we heard about it, and certainly he's also very sad. Now, he also, as you probably know, he says he's innocent, and I think you have to remember that. He said very strongly yesterday that he's innocent, so you'll have to talk to him about that, but we absolutely wish him well. Did a very good job while he was at the White House.
There's a long history of this for the GOP. When I say long, I mean 30 or so years. There was a gentleman back during, and I use the term loosely, back during the Reagan administration named John Fetters. John Fetters was a hulking man, 6'5", 6'6", just a big, brutal man. And he beat the hell out of his wife, Charlotte Fetters. And it ended up on the news. And when Reagan was asked about it, there was nothing. And, you know, God, he's so great and he's doing such a great job. But then during one of the State of the Union addresses that Reagan gave, Reagan said into the mic while old Charlotte was at home listening. He says into the mic, he says, I am going to do this, that, and the other about domestic violence. We've got to stop the scourge of domestic violence. And Charlotte, she was so happy to hear that. She goes, God, that means you're going to fire John because John beat the hell out of me. A lot. And it wasn't just physical abuse, it was mental abuse too. And the Reagan administration weathered it for as long as they could, and then they finally had to get rid of John. And Trump did the same thing. They knew because Rob Porter couldn't get a permanent security clearance. And he couldn't get a permanent security clearance because of the domestic violence in his past. The two wives that had divorced him, he beat the hell out of both of them. And there was a record of it. And hold on. This is another nutty thing. Hope Hicks, who just quit the White House, was dating Rob Porter. Okay, so she worked for Trump, so clearly not that brilliant. But then she decided to date this guy after he got divorced by two women after he beat the hell out of them. But the thing about Trump is he always takes the side of the abuser. It doesn't matter who it is. And Trump always throws out this line. Remember, guys, he has denied it. It didn't happen. Roy Moore, remember, he totally denied it. It doesn't matter. He always sides with the domestic abusers. He always sides with the men. So here we are with another woman story in the news. Another woman story that has to do with Donald Trump. Only this time, it's not him. That's not him defending a domestic abuser.
Did the president approve of the payment that was made in October of 2016 by his longtime lawyer and advisor, Michael Cohen?
Look, the president has addressed these directly and made very well clear that none of these allegations are true. This case has already been won in arbitration, and anything beyond that, I would refer you to the president's outside counsel.
That clip right there of Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying that they won an arbitration case, that has caused a lot of stomach pains in the Trump administration. Because it's the first time when Sean Spicer was there, Sean Spicer said, nope, never happened, next. And then when Sarah Huckabee Sanders came in, they were asked again. And nope, she said, nope, never happened, next, moved on. This is the first time that the White House has acknowledged that the president has taken any direct action about this. And Trump is now pissed at her. He's not pissed at the fact that he paid a porn star. Now, he paid a porn star off a week before the election. He's not pissed at himself for cheating on his wife after she had just had their baby and she was home with their kid. He's not pissed about it. He's pissed at Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And I don't have any love for Sarah Huckabee Sanders. He's pissed at her for getting on the mic and telling everybody about his no-no. How dare you?
I personally like Ms. Sanders. I think she has a near impossible job. But the fact of the matter is, and I'm confident that she didn't know that it was nonsense when she effectively told that to the world, but it's absolutely bogus. It's nonsense. Any claim by the administration that Donald Trump won in arbitration is no different than me claiming that I won the Super Bowl a few weeks ago. It's complete hooey.
So here's the way it went. Donald Trump cheated with Stormy Daniels back in 2007. I don't know if there was any payment back then. I can't imagine she was honestly attracted to him, but then again, I don't pretend to know Stormy Daniels' type. I have, and I'm not lying about this, I've heard of porn stars before. I've heard even names of specific porn stars, but I'd never heard of Stormy Daniels before this whole thing happened. So he messes around with her back in 2007. And then when the Access Hollywood tape comes out, his lawyer comes to him and says, is there anything else out there? Yeah, you got to pay off a porn star. He goes and he pays off the porn star. And then she signs a non-disclosure agreement. But he, and this is what we're learning now, Donald Trump did not sign that non-disclosure agreement. And he had a fake name, too, that he an assumed name that he was going under. David Draymond or something stupid like that, or David Davidson or something asinine. It turns out Trump didn't sign it. Stormy accepted the check, but he didn't sign it. So how did we find out about the $130,000 payment? And that's what it is. His lawyer paid Stormy Daniels $130,000 and made her sign a non-disclosure agreement. How did we find out about the $130,000? When the money was taken out of the bank at the time, back in October of 2016, to pay off the porn star, the bank flagged it but didn't do anything about it. But the Mueller case, yes, this is how we found out. The Mueller case found out about that $130,000. And then they went to the bank. And the bank says, well, we thought it was suspicious, but we didn't do much about it. And so then the bank goes back to his lawyer and says, we need you to explain this $130,000. And this is how we know about it now. And of course, now Stormy is suing the president because she wants to talk about it. And dig this. And she says, oh my goodness, she says she's got photographs of their time together. Oh my goodness. So I'm imagining lots of photographs of him with crumpled up fast food wrappers on his chest while he watches Shark Week. That's what he made her watch the whole time. You know, or pictures of his little orange doodle. That's what, there are pictures? I don't want to see the pictures. But I want the pictures to be out in the public domain because I know what it would do to this guy's ego. It would absolutely destroy him. And that's what I want. I'm completely cool with that because Donald Trump has spent his life destroying other people, not the least of which are women. There are 19 different women who have accused Donald Trump of rape, or sexual liberties, indecent sexual liberties, unwanted sexual advances. There are 19 women. And a lot of them came out during the election and said that this happened to us. But for the Trump base, they say there's no effing way that happened. Bitches be lying. And then Trump himself stood on stage and said, yep, they're all lying. And after the election is all over, I'm going to sue every one of them.
Every woman lied when they came forward to hurt my campaign. Total fabrication. The events never happened. Never. All of these liars will be sued after the election is over.
And they simply take his word for it. He's innocent and they're lying. Whenever women come forward, and they don't know each other, and they all tell the same story about the same guy, and it seems to fit the MO that the guy himself has described about himself on tape, then we say, clearly bitches be lying. Donald Trump has not taken that action to try to sue any of these women, because that's not the kind of thing he needs in the news right now. He does not need lawyers and cases and suits about sexual improprieties and like what's happening with Stormy Daniels right now. He does not need that 19 more times. So he has not gone after those women. But I think the biggest reason he's not gone after those women, because he's sued for dumber things. He sued Bill Maher for $5 million. When Bill Maher produced evidence that his dad was not an orangutan. So this guy is not above going into court for incredibly stupid things. And let's get into Ivanka for just a little bit. Ivanka at times has seemed like she is progressive on these issues. And after there was an award show a couple months ago where they all wore the black and they wore the Time's Up buttons and they, you know, the Me Too buttons and all that stuff. And I remember day or two after that happened, it hit the headlines. Ivanka tweets out, Time's Up, right? So Time's Up, perverts, Time's Up for all of you perverts. That is, of course, except for her dad. And she was recently asked about that. There are 19 women accusing your dad of sexual indecency, you know, unwanted sexual advances and all this stuff. There are 19 women. What do you have to say about that? And the way Ivanka decides to handle it is, how dare you ask me this question in the age of Me Too? You wouldn't be asking me this question if I were a guy.
Your father's been accused of sexual misconduct by roughly 19 women. Do you believe your father's accusers?
I think it's a pretty inappropriate question to ask a daughter if she believes the accusers of her father when he's affirmatively stated that there's no truth to it. I don't think that's a question you would ask many other daughters.
These are unique circumstances, obviously. There hasn't been a situation where the accusations have numbered this many. I guess, to be clear,
there have been some similar parallels, and I don't think you would be asking the same question.
To be clear, you think all the women are making it up, though?
I believe my father. I know my father. So I think I have that right as a daughter believe my father.
If one woman, just one, went to my wife and said, Melvin did this to me. Even though my wife knows me and has known me for about half my life now, she's never heard that from anybody. So if someone came to her and said that kind of thing, I think her first inclination, and rightfully so, would be to believe them. And whether it were true or not, it would be up to me to handle it like an adult. And what Ivanka has decided to do, and I get that it's uncomfortable, but you don't get to tweet, time's up, when you got a pervert right freaking there that you call dad. You know, the same one that said that he wanted to date you? You don't get to pretend like you're a part of this movement and that you're a victim of this movement, because how dare somebody ask you about your pervert rapist father? How dare they? You don't get to do that. But she's learned, and she's learned well from dad, that bitches be the problem. So in the first segment today, I talked about the race issue that conservatives have and how it appears they've just decided that they're just going to fully embrace the white power GOP, and that's what they're going forward with. But that's not the only problem. See, Donald Trump got more than 60% of white women to vote for him. The white women I know didn't vote for him, but then the white women I know are by and large educated. But he still got a majority of white women to vote for him, even with all of these things. So we are still very much in this age where we don't believe the women. And it's not always Republicans. It's not definitely, I mean, John Edwards, Bill Clinton, the Wiener guy. what an unfortunate name, you know? I mean, there's Democrats that have done this stuff too. But when the Democrats were accused, we went to the women and we said, girls, this is what happened? This, wow, okay. Well, then, you know, there goes Senator Franken, you know, and Bill Clinton will never be. When I tune into Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, to this day, they still hammer on Bill Clinton about messing around with those women, taking liberties with them that he had no right to take. But when it comes to Donald Trump, it's completely cool. So there doesn't just seem to be a race problem inside the GOP. There also seems to be a woman problem. And I saw this in the biggest terms possible at CPAC this year. So, you know, we're making the big circle right back around, right? So we began the show with a CPAC clip, a couple of CPAC clips. And now we're back to CPAC again. But this time it has to do with the woman issue. Mona Sharon is a conservative columnist, and she writes for the New York Times. Realizing the woman problem and being a conservative woman with honestly held conservative beliefs, and a woman who wants to be in the GOP, and a woman who wants to be the champion for the GOP, said, hey, first of all, crowd, and she's on stage, okay? You can see the clip of this on YouTube. I'll play the audio for you. And she's on stage, and she says, hey, we've got to do something about the woman issue. We've got to do something about the child molester issue. Yeah, because our party endorsed a child molester, and the child molester lost. We got to do something about the child molester issue, too. And her words were not welcome on that GOP stage.
I'm actually going to twist this around a bit and say that I'm disappointed in people on our side.
Okay.
For being hypocrites about sexual harassers and abusers of women who are in our party, who are sitting in the White House, who brag about their extramarital affairs, who brag about mistreating women. And because he happens to have an R after his name, we look the other way, we don't complain. This is a party that was ready to endorse, the Republican Party endorsed Roy Moore for the Senate in the state of Alabama, even though he was a credibly accused child molester. You cannot claim that you stand for women and put up with that.
She was booed off the stage, and you can hear it being said in a southern drawl, not true, not true. We don't want to believe that, so therefore that ain't true. That darn happened. Yeah, it did happen. And you've got some rational voices inside the GOP with honestly held conservative beliefs who want to see more from their party. And the party has said, nope, the domestic abusers, those are ours. The pussy grabbers, those are ours. The child molesters, those are ours. The KKK, those are ours. The robber barons, the bankers, those are ours. The multinational corporations, the white-hooded judges, those are ours. And so the GOP now finds themselves in this really interesting position where whenever this kind of thing happens with a Democrat, and as I mentioned, Bill Clinton still just eviscerated to this day by Rush Limbaugh, but this Stormy Daniels story, not really a story, didn't really happen. She's lying. All of them. The other 19 women, lie, lie, lie. All those women that said that Roy Moore, was a 34-year-old man, got kicked out of the Gadsden Mall because he was trolling for teenagers. Lies, lies, lies. And it's because we don't want to believe it. And the other thing I mentioned earlier on the show is it must be nice to have Rush Limbaugh, right? Because no matter what the truth is, no matter what the reality is, he hits the air every day with a brand new spin. Him and Hannity and Michael Berry, every day, new spin. You don't have to believe the truth. You don't have to believe reality. The reality is what we write. The reality is what we create. Oh, and by the way, the entire media, liberals, number liberals. You can't listen to anybody but us. We're the only ones that love you. We're the only ones that got the truth. We are the only ones that are here for you, but it's not true. And at some point, the GOP is going to have to face up to the race issue. And they're going to have to realize that they're coddling Klansmen and white supremacists. And they're going to have to face up to the woman issue. Get it. The Democrats, they've got dirt and blood on their hands too, right? They're not innocent. But we call them out when they do things like this. The GOP is going to have to realize what they've got on their hands. And they're going to have to handle them the same way that they handled the Democrats.
At some point, Lawrence, the President of the United States needs to answer the very basic questions relating to his relationship with Ms. Daniels. He needs to do so just like Bill Clinton did. He needs to do so just like Gary Hart did. He needs to do so just like countless other politicians have done over the last 30 years.
That's Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Michael Avenatti, who is getting to be on television a lot these days, and rightfully so. The GOP has gotten away with racism and sexism for a long, long time. But I think that those days are numbered. I certainly like to believe that those days are numbered. I believe that the good is always going to prevail eventually. Yeah, I know that the good guy didn't always win in the moment necessarily. But I don't believe in losses either. Delayed victories, yes. But losses, no. No, because as long as we live to fight another day, then we have not really lost. And the GOP is going to have to deal with these issues from Stormfront to Stormy. These are their issues. They've brought all of these things on. They've gotten away with the racism and the sexism for a hell of a long time. And my hope is that good people this year, Hillary people, Bernie people, this is so stupid, the fights, you know? I'm hoping that all of you can come out and let them know what you really think. You know a woman. You have to. If you're a dude, you've got a wife or a girlfriend, okay? Or if you've got a dude, that's cool too. But you've got a mom. You've got a woman. You've got a sister. You've got a woman somewhere in your life. And these things, they do not happen, you know, in a bubble or in a vacuum. These things, when they happen to one woman, They happen to all women. And when it happens to women, it happens to all of us. We're all connected. And we can't talk. And tribalism cannot be the game that we play here. This cannot be the language that we speak when this stuff happens. It happens to all of us. And we don't get to say, well, a Democrat did it, so that's clearly only their problem. You know, or a Republican did it, so it's not really a problem. We have to see it for what it is. And no party is innocent here. As a society, a whole society, we've not been great to women. And we've not been great to African Americans. And we've not been great to Latino people. As an American society, tons of us, regardless of politics, have not been great on this issue. You know, even I, as a liberal, when I drive by a field full of Latinos picking fruit, I know what's going on there. But I don't stop and stomp on the ground and stomp my fist and become Cesar Chavez. I don't. Because I feel like, one, it wouldn't be effective. You know, but I do recognize what's going on. And I don't deny that it's a problem. And when I'm enjoying fruits and vegetables, I don't forget about those people that are working tirelessly in the fields to bring those foods to me. I'm not blind to that fact. The slaves that make the clothing, I'm not blind to that fact. But there are a lot of people that are, and completely unwilling to admit that those things are a problem. We are at a crossroads too. And this year we can make history, but it's up to us. But unfortunately, the first thing, the very first thing that we have to do before we can face up to any of these problems is we've got to get up off our couch, get off of our phones and tablets, quit watching the latest Orange is the New Blue or whatever crappy show you're watching right now, and you have to get involved in democracy because it is not a spectator sport, borrowing that phrase from somebody. It involves all of us, and everyone needs to get out there and get involved. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fire You Camp at our official home, tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for the Fire You Camp out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Rejecting sexism, rejecting racism. This is us. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. And thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I have woken you up, you got work to do. Good morning.